Markus, kannst du deinen Screenshare wieder anmachen?
Ist an.
Ist also da. I welcome Markus Stöckbauer. He's a network engineer working since over 15 years in the industry, starting at Mandar, later at EKX Megaport, and now he helps designing the active side of the FTTH network for Vattenfall Eurofiber. His talk will give us an overview of passive optical networks and designs and compared with active optical networks. It will show advantages and disadvantages of both technologies and give examples where one might choose over one over the other technology. If you have any questions, please use the question function on the right side. We will have a short Q&A afterwards. So Markus, please begin.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Markus. And before we start, a couple of words for introduction. My affiliation was already mentioned. I'm working for Vattenfall Eurofiber. So we are building a FTTH network in Berlin right now. So my views are that of a fiber carrier when I'm talking about FTTH networks, PON and AON. But although those are the views that I gained while I was working here in this field, everything I'm expressing here, all views and opinions are mine. So I don't represent not my affiliation, not any other company. I'm just basically telling my views and opinions like I see them and like I mean them. The presentation that you see here exists also as a series of articles. Maybe you don't want to move over there right now. The URL is here. Please note there is no R in the URL. But this is maybe interesting for later. There is a little bit more information on there. It's not completely done yet. There are one or two sections missing, but the main technical aspects are already there. And you can read a little bit up on it at a later point. The actual reason why I'm doing this talk is that I've seen in the last couple of months and the discussions going on in the DNOC IRC channel on mailing lists and so on about access networks, fiber buildouts, and obviously as network engineers, we have opinions on that and quite strong opinions. But also in those discussions and in the conversations, I noticed that everything was basically based on the technology that we know from our field of work. So if you're working as a service provider on a data center network, networks from this aspect. And that was the same for me. I knew service provider networks. I knew transport networks where you just push layer two over the networks. I didn't know access networks that much. And I went through a learning process in the last year since I started with Vattenfall Eurofiber. And this opportunity I wanted to take and give you some insights and explain access networks in the language of a service provider engineer. So in short, I'm not talking about like what wavelengths are, how optics work, how fibers work or something like that. This is all something that we know and that I'm taking for granted that we know that. I'm just pointing out the differences between the networks and different scaling metrics that we encounter in access networks that we don't usually have in service provider or data center networks. Another assumption, or one of the main assumptions that I'm making here is that I'm looking at a two-tier network. I'm talking about a fiber carrier network. The domain of the fiber carrier is this of the access network where the subscribers are connected and the transport network. And then we have wholesale carriers, I call them. They can be service providers, whatever. Usually they are the large ones that we know, 1&1, Telefonica, Deutsche Telekom, Vodafone, who provide then the end-to-end service over the network of the fiber carrier. Keep this in mind when I'm talking about things, because this is the base of most of the things that I'm talking here about. And you don't see this all the time in the field, usually, or sometimes the wholesale carrier is also building out fiber to the building. And then obviously they don't have much incentive to resell their fiber, or they just do it to an increased price. If you have a fiber carrier who doesn't participate in the subscriber market, who's not acting as a wholesale carrier as well, they can offer a more neutral approach to the access to the subscribers. And then the competition is happening on the wholesale carrier market because they can reach most of all the subscribers of the fiber carrier for the same price usually. So I'm concentrating on that model when we're talking about all the networks here in this talk. Before we dive into this, a couple of just some short definitions. I'm calling them confusing definitions because AON actually means active optical network, but there's no active component in there as such. What we mean here is a point-to-point structure of fibers. Another term for what would be P2P, which is point-to-point. This is a synonym for AON. And that means that each subscriber has their own fiber to the first active network element. There's no sharing going on. Contrast to that is PON, passive optical network, where we have splitters introduced and we have a passive aggregation layer with the use of those optical splitters. So multiple subscribers share one fiber here. The advantages and disadvantages of that we'll discuss later. And just a real quick overview, what we want to talk about or what I want to talk about here. You're mostly listening, I'm assuming. I'm talking about the AON design and topology. Then jump on to the PON, the passive side of PON, the distinction that are happening there from the AON network that we're looking at, talking a little bit about active network devices and protocols on the PON side, the adjustments that we make to the overall PON network design for reselling. And in the end, I just summarize and discuss a little bit the advantages and disadvantages of those technologies. This is just something I want to touch really quick on. There are a couple of acronyms that we are using here or that I'm using here in those slides. Most of them are coming from probably the world of Deutsche Telekom or even Bundespost before. So they are German acronyms. You can just, if you're looking up the slides later, you can just jump in here and read them up. I'm going to explain them a little bit while we are looking at the diagrams. That's a lot nicer than just reading through all those things. Just as a word, we have here the German and the English word in it. The English word is just meant as a rough translation. We're starting with the AON topology. So in the very beginning, we have, we're just looking at one building. We have a subscriber in this building at the very top here. Oh, my mouse cursor is gone. Or anyways, at the very top here, we have a subscriber. They have usually a kind of CPE kind of device, like a Fritzbox or something similar. And then their fiber, described here as number one, going from the apartment of the subscriber to the basement to a distribution box, which is called GFGV, Glasfaser Gebäudeverteiler in German. It's basically just a distribution box in the basement, which holds all the fibers coming from the building. And they are going to be terminated there. From this termination box, we put in a second fiber, which goes to another termination box, which is called GFAP. This is in German Glasfaser Anschlusspunkt. Basically, it's still another termination box in the basement. You can combine this with the GFGV. The main distinction here is this termination box holds the fiber which is going to the outside of the street and marks the beginning of the domain of the fiber carrier. The other box might still be in possession of the building owners, and they could potentially pull fibers into their apartments. So you have neat and clean distinctions between those two. You usually put in two distribution boxes in the basement, put a fiber in between, patch between those, and then you continue in the domain of the fiber carrier. From this distribution box, the GFAP on the left side, we're going with a fiber, that's number three here, to a street cabinet, which we will call here NVT, Netzwerkverteiler. And this is usually a small distribution box or like a small street cabinet that we're putting on the street. And those are collecting fibers going to all the other buildings in the neighborhood. The definition of neighborhood is a little bit up to the network design here. It depends a little bit how much fibers you want to terminate, how much fibers you can terminate in such a street cabinet, and how much you can handle in those spaces. So you would usually put a few of those in a larger area that you build out with fiber to the home. On the other side, this is the fiber number four that we're seeing here in this picture. You have a fiber which goes to a point which we call central office. Central office is the first aggregation point where we put active network equipment in. This term has been established, I think, mostly in the PON world. There might be other terms for that in the world of Deutsche Telekom. But what we're using here is the CO central office thing. Potentially, you could go from the first street cabinet to another aggregation street cabinet and then onwards to the central office. This is mostly depending on the network design that you want to achieve. But the important thing is that in this distribution box, in the central office, this is the first one where we have active networks and the passive network actually stops. Two more definitions that I want to give you here is the ones of drop cables and feeder cables. The distinction is basically drop cables are going from usually the first street cabinet towards the houses, to the buildings. Those are usually smaller cables which are going there, while feeder cables go from the street cabinet towards the central office, and they are usually larger cables which hold a lot more fibers, where you then aggregate multiple buildings on and route them further to the central office. This was just really quick the AON topology that you do. As you see, we're mostly talking about just fibers here, except for the couple of devices in the central office. But the main thing to remember is this topology is the base topology that you use. You use this for a PON network as well. So what we're doing now is we're diving a little bit into the PON network, the passive network design. And you will see that we're building upon the AON topology that we're using here. Again, I was telling you that before, PON means passive optical network. The term here is misleading since the AON design we've seen before, it was also completely passive. The main thing that PON brings in here is a passive distribution layer with power splitters. So the split ratio is a 1 to a power of 2. So we have like you can 1 to 2, 1 to 4, 1 to 8, and so on splitters. And with the help of those splitters, we're sharing one fiber between multiple subscribers. One of those, each splitter adds roughly 3 dB loss. So if you have a 1 to 4 splitter, each of those elements gets a lot less light than we would have before. But on the other hand, you can combine them on one fiber. So you're basically trading the length that you can use this fiber for sharing a fiber, and you need to put less fibers in the ground in the end. Just real quick, the power splitter works exactly like that. You have four end customer devices. Those are the ONTs at the top. You have the splitter in the middle, and it's a power splitter, and it combines all those towards the OLT. In the other direction, of course, the light is being sent out from which comes from the OLT side to all ONTs. This is the shared medium that we're talking about here. Where would we use those splitters now? We can put them basically everywhere in the fiber path, but the three most common locations for those splitters is first in the GFAP. On the other side, it doesn't make much sense in the GFAP in the distribution box, which holds all the cables coming from the building, because fiber inside the building is not super expensive. You usually just put them down there, and then you're done. You don't need to touch the building anymore. So the first place where you actually want to save fibers and want to combine multiple subscribers onto fiber would be the GFAP, which holds the first fiber, which goes to the outside and is the first part of the domain of the fiber carrier. This is the number one here. So there could be a splitter in it. You could put a splitter in the NVT on the street level, in the street cabinet. That's number two here. On this splitter, you probably would combine basically the building that we've just seen, maybe put other buildings on there. You can also decide to route buildings past the splitter and put them directly on the fiber, which then goes to the central office. Or you can just combine everything on the splitter, route them further to the central office. And that's number three. And then you can potentially put a splitter in the central office as well. It's all depending again on how you want to actually want to design the network. It's match and mix. You can put them wherever you like, but you need to make sure obviously that the physics match and that you stay within the attenuation and the power the power values that those optics are giving you. The impacts of the splitting, however, are quite large. So in this case, we're looking at a building which has 12 apartments. Each of those apartments has one fiber going into there. So as you see, I am in those small circles. You see now the number of fibers that we're using on each on each cable. So coming from those apartments, we have four different different fibers, which are then being terminated in the distribution box in the basement. So a total of 12 fibers are used here, and we're routing all those 12 fibers over to the next distribution box, the blue one on the left side, which is the GFAP, where we will combine those fibers with a splitter. So all those 12 fibers are going on the 1-16 splitter and then being routed out on one fiber. This is again, so we're basically saving 11 fibers coming from the building and going to the outside. In the street cabinet, the NVT that we're seeing here, we have again a splitter where we're combining two fibers from another cable which are coming in together with the one fiber that we're having from the current building that which I was just looking in, combining this into one fiber, routing this further to the central office. And then all those apartments that we see in the building, everything that comes from the other two fibers on the left side in the NVT are being combined on the one fiber and terminated on one port on the network devices that we have in the central office. So you see, we have a lot less fibers to handle. We can reduce the number of fibers needed in the feeder and in the drop cables if we are introducing splitters. In general, we have to handle a lot less fibers, a lot less patches in between, and in return, we also have less money to spend for a fiber build out here. The downside, obviously, is that we're adding a shared medium for the access subscriber here. There are a couple of more downsides. We'll come to that later. The benefits, if we actually want to use splitters, if you actually want to use PON or AON technologies, depend actually where you want to deploy that. Imagine you have a smaller city in a more rural area. You might find enough space to to put in a building where you want to terminate those fibers. Maybe the distance between this termination site and all the houses is not too large. Then you could potentially pull fibers through the city into this one building and just make sure that everything's terminated there, AON deployment, everything's peachy. It looks a little bit different if you go into large cities. As I'm saying, the company that I'm working for, Vattenfall Eurofiber, is doing FTTH deployment in Berlin, and I have the experience in the last year from that. And so you hear some numbers. We are calculating with roughly 12 apartments per building in central Berlin. Even the small street here has easily 40 buildings if you count both sides of the street. So if you would count all those apartments, we already have 480 fibers if we would do an AON deployment here. Though this is just a small street in Berlin and just one street. And imagine how much more comes together if we're doing the whole area. Huge amounts of fibers that you need to route through or you need to terminate at some point. And the more fibers you have, the earlier you need to terminate. And that means the more aggregation points for where you need to put active equipment you also have. This is all part of the network design and of the thought that you put into that, where you need to decide which technology do I want to use, what is easier to handle, what is actually manageable right now. As a summary for the impact of splitters, the fiber becomes a shared medium. That's one of the downsides. On the other hand, the passive network becomes cheaper to build, easier to scale, easier to handle, easier to operate. And it also becomes more complex and more error prone because you're adding multiple stations to one fiber strand. So if one of those stations doesn't behave, you need to figure out which one that is. You need to remove it. You're adding oversubscription to the last mile, obviously. Last mile, I mean, between the subscriber and the active network. And to balance the number of subscribers per fiber and the port, that's the split ratio that you want to use. This is the really hard part if you build those networks. On the everything I have on the passive side. Now we're jumping a little bit onto the active devices. I'm staying fairly high level here, as you noticed already, because there's a lot of ground to cover, and I just want to give you like a high level overview and some incentives why carriers might use one technology over the other. The main components that we have for PON networks are OLTs and ONTs. OLT means optical line terminal. It's like a switch-like aggregation device, which is located in the central office. It's a larger one. It terminates PON ports and has an uplink to the transport network usually. And it holds, it's basically the first active network device that the subscriber sees after their CPE. And the CPE on their side is then usually called an ONT. That's the optical network terminal. It can be a pure media converter from PON to Ethernet. It can also be like Fritzbox exists where they have the PON optic included. So the ONT part is part of the Fritzbox. Then you have a whole router built around it. Or from other vendors, you also get like a router-based systems which include the PON part, where you have the switch in it, where you have Wi-Fi in it, things like that. But in general, we call those ONTs. If we're looking at the technologies themselves, there are two main technologies actually that are in use in the field right now. That's GPON and XGS-PON. A short comparison of those are on the table on the right side. They are using different wavelengths, as you see, for downstream and upstream within the technology and between the technologies as well. So XGS-PON and GPON don't use overlapping wavelengths, which is good because that basically means we can use them simultaneously on the same fiber. There's an upgrade path for one to the other. If you wouldn't have the upgrade path, you would need to upgrade everyone on the same fiber strand from one technology to the other. This way, on one fiber strand or on one fiber, you can have subscribers which are still on GPON and some subscribers which are already on XGS-PON. They wouldn't interfere with each other. The speed of those, I need to mention, there are bidirectional optics. So we have one fiber, obviously, and that's why the different wavelengths for downstream and upstream. The maximum line rate that we're looking here for GPON, G stands for gigabit usually. It's a bit more than gigabit, but we have like 2.5 gigabit per second for the downstream direction, and 1.25 gigabit per second for the upstream direction. So this is asymmetric. The other thing for XGS-PON is the S stands for symmetric. So we have symmetric line rates here, maximum achievable on those ports for at roughly 10 gigabits per second. It's not exactly 10 gigabits per second, probably because of some overhead of the protocols that are using here. I'm not going into details of that at all. But it's different from Ethernet. Let's just put it like that. It's a different protocol in the end. It's ITU. But it can achieve almost 10 gigabits symmetrical on the fiber, which is a good thing. So, and most of the networks either run GPON and are in the process of upgrading to some XG or XGS-PON variant, at least in the midterm. Or they are running XGS-PON already, because right now we are at a point where XGS-PON and GPON are roughly equivalent in pricing. XGS-PON is a little bit more expensive still, but the benefits that you gain from it are a lot larger. So if you would start with a new network, you would probably go to XGS-PON. Or if you're still on GPON, you probably would upgrade in the next 2 to 3 years. The next iteration of those protocols, it's not really clear yet what it will be. There's a 25 GPON and a 50 GPON. They are mostly in planning and field trials. The mass deployment of those is still a few years out before we actually see them in the field. But again, those will run on different wavelengths than at least XGS-PON will be. So you have an upgrade path from XGS-PON to the next technology. They are at least looking at that, and that you can run them in parallel and don't need to migrate all the customers at once, which would be a really, really large pain. As I mentioned, we don't have much time for a deep dive into the transmission and control protocols. Just know they are different from Ethernet. Here are just a couple of key facts that I want to give you about those protocols. We have OLTs and ONTs, which communicate with each other via a control protocol, which is called OMCI. And there's a dedicated control channel for each ONT. So each OLT can communicate, an OLT can communicate with each ONT on a different channel. They're negotiating some kind of encryption between the OLT and the ONT because the fiber between those two is a shared medium. So with encryption, other stations can't easily sniff. I haven't looked into it actually how well the encryption is. I think it's AES something. So I think it's fairly okay. With some effort, you might be able to crack it, but it's not easily doable at least. And since we have a shared medium, we also need media access control because otherwise we will have collisions, obviously. In the downstream direction from the OLT to the ONT, that's fairly easy. The OLT just broadcasts traffic out the port. It's encrypted for the ONT that it's destined for. And this specific ONT decrypts it. Everything is fine. In the other direction, it's a little bit more difficult. The ONTs need to can't send at the same time, obviously. So we are using time division multiple access here, and each ONT gets a pre-assigned time slot when it's allowed to send. The time slot allocation here is dynamic, which is the important part. So they don't get all the same time slots. It depends on the distance between the OLT and the ONT. Because obviously ONTs which are farther away need longer to transmit the same amount of data than ONTs which are just very close to the OLT. And it also depends on the traffic that the ONT wants to send. Usually you don't have all subscribers on the same fiber who want to send all traffic all the time, but you have a few stations who want to send. They can signal that and they get more bandwidth. And then when more stations want to send, the bandwidth gets distributed over all those stations. But in general, it's being distributed in the downstream and in the upstream direction. If we're just looking at the bandwidth that we have available per user, obviously for GPON, if you're looking at the split ratio from 1 to 32 usually, which is quite low, usually you would probably go higher in GPON networks. Then you have 77 megabits per second in the downstream and 38 megabits per second in the upstream direction. That's just the maximum line rate divided by 32, obviously, which would mean you achieve that if every station wants to send and receive traffic or at full speed at the same time. If we're doing the same calculation for XGS-PON with a higher split ratio, 1 to 64, you already have 155 megabits per second, roughly, in upstream and downstream direction. And again, remember the bandwidth assignment here is dynamic. So you usually get a lot more than this, if not all the 64 stations on the same cable, on the same fiber, want to send or receive at the same time. So, I mean, the bandwidth that you can achieve with PON is fairly decent compared to the combined with the benefits that you have, that you use less fibers. It's an attractive technology that you can use in the field. The only problem that you have here is you can't easily break out one subscriber on a fiber and hand them over to a specific wholesale carrier. So what you can do with an AON network, each subscriber has their own fiber. And if you want, one subscriber wants to have 1&1, the other one wants to have Versatel, the next one wants to have Deutsche Telekom, you just hand over those fibers, you patch them towards the carrier, they take over, everything is fine. That's not doable with PON because they are on a shared medium. And the solution that we're using here was introduced with the DSL in DSL times already, and it's called layer 2 bitstream access. So we're basically transporting layer 2 data from the subscriber to the wholesale carrier. As a high-level network diagram, it looks roughly like that. We have the transport network in the middle, number one. We have connected to this transport network wholesale carriers. They can be different ones. They can be the same ones on multiple ports, however they want to do it. The OLTs are also connected to the transport network, and the subscriber, that's number three, obviously is then connected to the OLT. And if a subscriber wants to send some traffic, they will send it, it goes to the OLT. The OLT sends it to the first device in the transport network, and then it gets encapsulated in the transport protocol, whatever that is, Ethernet, VPN, MPLS, or pseudo-wire-based MPLS, or whatever you want to use there, then sends to the wholesale carrier as a layer 2 stream, and the wholesale carrier adds IP to the whole mixture, and this way you're doing the reselling model on PON networks. Now we're almost done. A short comparison of what we've seen of the advantages and disadvantages. Again, this is from the point of view, the advantages that I'm going here are from the point of view of the wholesale carrier, because he's the one who holds the relationship with the subscribers, and so this is the most visible part for the subscribers. On the Aon side, the wholesale carrier has maximum flexibility. He has a fiber that he can light that they can light themselves. They can control the access medium, and they can do whatever they like with it. On the downside, you need more aggregation points because you can't span a lot of fibers, or you can't route a lot of fibers through the city like that. So the economic threshold that you have here is a lot higher. What I mean by that is the number of subscribers at an active aggregation point that you as a wholesale carrier need to make it economically reasonable to build the active network equipment for this area where the aggregation point is located. And it gets split more. Like, you have more aggregation points, so that means you need to look at each aggregation point, which serves a smaller number of subscribers, and you need to make sure that you have a minimum number of subscribers there to make it feasible for you to build there and get your money worth out of it. And another point that I didn't mention that much so far, if you want to put in transition technology like G.fast mini DSLAMs in the basement of each building, connect them with fiber back to your network, this there's no resale model for that for in the Aon world, obviously, because you have the G.fast modem or G.fast DSLAM in the basement, and each wholesale carrier would need to put this one in the basement if the building administration wouldn't allow you to put fiber into the apartments of the subscribers. So the Aon model is cool. You get a lot of flexibility. You can get all the speed that you want. It's 100% future-proof, but the possible benefits here are more on larger or established wholesale carriers. They can afford to go into those aggregation points. They can also afford to maybe wait a year or two until they have the economic benefits from building out this aggregation point. Smaller ones, maybe not so much. On the PON side, we have fewer sites where you hand over the subscribers to the wholesale carriers, fewer aggregation points. So at those aggregation points, you can reach more potential customers. And in return, what I mentioned before, the economic threshold for deployment is a lot better here. You buy this, of course, with a stricter model, less flexibility for the wholesale carrier, because you need to have the fiber carrier in between, or you need to be your own fiber carrier. You have a dependency on this fiber carrier, on its technology. You need to pay the fiber carrier, obviously. And you have the layer 2 transport of the fiber carrier in between as well. So debugging might be harder if there are problems coming up. You need to debug together with the fiber carrier. But I think it's a better possibility for smaller providers to start, because they can just go in one or two data centers, get a port to the fiber carrier, and automatically have access to all their subscribers via those two ports. In summary, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution here. The technology mostly depends on economic parameters that you want to set, the choice of your technology, if you want to use AON or PON, which PON technology you want to use. Economic parameters is mostly what I told you before. When does it make sense to build out an area with FTTH? How many customers does a wholesale carrier or fiber carrier need to actually build out those fibers? You also have technical requirements. How many fibers can we handle in a distribution point? How often do we need to add active equipment? And then environmental requirements coming into play. How much space is available to put street cabinets on the street? In more rural areas, it might be easier. You just go to the corner of the city. Maybe you can build one or two stations on or maybe even four stations on each side. And that's good enough. If you're looking at larger cities like Berlin, street space is very rare. And if you say, hey, I'm building a fiber network here, then the city might say, okay, cool, yeah, you can put up your street cabinet here. But then if you have aggregation points, there's not enough space to host for wholesale carriers in this, usually in the street cabinet. So they put another street cabinet next to it, the next wholesale carrier puts a street cabinet next to it, and so on. That basically means, yeah, you would basically have a lot of street cabinets suddenly bundling up in some areas of the city, and no one actually would allow that, probably. That was, in real quick, everything. No questions.
Okay, yeah, we do. Thank you for the talk. It was quite interesting from my perspective. We do have some questions here. Starting with the first, why is PON asymmetric in most of the times?
PON is asymmetric if you use GPON. If you go further to XGS PON, then you have at least the base layer is symmetric. What product you put onto that, that's up to the whole carrier who's building out the PON, or in the end, the wholesale carrier who's doing that. But for XGS PON, it's a symmetric connection.
Okay. Isn't there a security risk since the combined optical signal at all termination points visible?
Yeah, that's what the encryption is coming for, and via the control channel or the encryption gets, they are the OLT and the ONT talk to each other, and they make out an encryption key via the control channel. And then all traffic which goes between the OLT and the ONT is encrypted. So the security risk here is that someone can sniff the encrypted traffic and maybe eventually break the encryption. But yeah, you have this everywhere on the internet, basically.
Okay. What split ratios do the major incumbents in Germany are using?
I have no idea. You would need to ask the major incumbent. But the split ratios that I mentioned here, like 1 to 32 is probably too low for a GPON that I was using in the table. Probably for GPON, I could imagine people would use 1 to 64. You can use up to 1 to 128, I think, on GPON. On XGS PON, I'm not really sure if you can go a lot higher. But again, the higher you go, the more you need to aggregate, because the loss is higher, obviously. So you need to also balance it depending on the area where you want to build out and how many aggregation points you have, where you can have active equipment, things like that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. When burying cables for connections of buildings, do you already account for defective single fibers and through spare fibers for later expansion, and how many?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you pull a fiber. The pulling the fiber itself is not the hard part. The price of fiber compared to the actually labor of pulling the fiber and doing the construction work on the street is minimal. So you would pull a lot more fibers into the building, probably also more than you more you would need plus spare fibers. So in case at a later point another technology comes and you want to use more fibers to connect the customers, you don't need to pull in new fibers immediately. How many fibers you would use on a cable as spares depends again on your economics, what you want to do. Personally, I would at least like if I want to, if I know that I'm using 8 fibers in the building, I would at least pull 16 or more into there.
Okay. How is the oversubscription ratio compared to the typical DSA cable setups for end customers?
I have no idea how the oversubscription on DSL or cable networks are. Just from experience, I can imagine, like I'm on a cable network right now, I can imagine they are quite high. From what I'm seeing is, or what my imagination would be that they are lower on the PON side, even lower on, well, not even lower, but on the AON side, they would be probably roughly the same as on the PON side, except that you're getting, you have the last mile for yourself. But I would imagine that if you're going with a fiber build out, the oversubscription is less, and the environmental issues that you have with frequencies or something or stuff like that is a lot lower as well compared to DSL or cable.
Okay. We have a lot more questions, so if you still have time, and I got some more time here, I will go on. So if that's fine for you.
Yeah, well, I don't mind.
Great. Do the splitters separate the signals, or is every subscriber receiving all signals?
Every subscriber is receiving all the signals on his fiber. So if the OLT sends out traffic towards this one port, all the subscribers which are on the same fiber receive all the traffic.
Okay. What is the maximum number of customers you can connect with a single fiber when using PON? I think that's basically how much
with GPON, I'm fairly certain the maximum would be 128. With XGS-PON, I'm not 100% sure if it's 128 or if they went up to 256.
Okay. Why would you need more handover points for wholesale carriers with AON? You can still sell bitstream access there.
That you can do. That's true. But then you would need to have the build the aggregation layer as the fiber carrier. And you would need to have the aggregation points earlier. So you would have more cost on the fiber networks, fiber carrier network side.
Okay. Which light levels are expected at the OTN? Can I look into the cable with my remaining eye?
Let me think. I don't know if you can actually look into it because I'm not that much into the physics of fiber cables. I think I remember something like 20 to 23 dBs total loss that you can have. But I might be wrong here. Don't quote me on that.
I would neither suggest to try it anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't really try it. I would never. But yeah. Actually, there was one more slide in my presentation that I got got out for time issues, which didn't work so well. If I look at the time now, but where I was explaining that I'm coming from the active network world, I know a little bit of passive networks I need to know to design active networks. But if you probe me too much, at some point I will say I don't know, as you mentioned in this questioning, you know.
Is there any agreed standard for layer 2 bitstream access?
Not really a standard, no. There has some kind of standardization going on. For example, there's a standardized interface with which you can order ports which are going via layer 2 BSA. In Germany at least, this standard is called ESPRI, S-P-R-I, which is basically an interface description describing the process of ordering a port, getting acknowledgement, getting to, so the whole SEC area gets to know when field service comes out, things like that are formalized. The actual interconnection between the fiber carrier and the whole SEC area is up to contract negotiations between the two. Usually, of course, if you're a larger wholesale carrier, you would ask for the same service that you already receive because you want to integrate it into your network.
Okay. Why not using CWDM or DWDM hardware?
Mostly because it's a lot more expensive than a PON hardware would be. There is an XG-PON variant which uses WDM instead of the time division multiple access that we've seen here. But this hasn't progressed much, and it's mostly dying out right by now because the other variant with the time division TDMA is a lot cheaper to produce and to operate than if you would use WDM on the access medium.
Okay, and now the last two questions. Is there a possibility to share the medium with other providers?
Not the medium itself. If you are on a fiber, the one fiber needs to be connected to the same OLT on the PON, because as I mentioned, the OLT will communicate with the ONTs. They will form a control channel, and the ONT also needs to be accepted on the OLT. So in order for the communication to happen, you need to have full control over this one fiber. What you could potentially do is give out fiber to different wholesale carriers, which are already routed via splitters. Then they can run their own PON hardware on this fiber. But that means that on this one fiber, every subscriber needs to be a customer of the wholesale carrier where the fiber is going to.
Okay, and the last one is NG-PON2, the IEEE standard, not really used in Europe?
This is a bit complicated, or I haven't looked that much into the different standards because there are different names for the XG or NG-PON standards. I think that XGS-PON is part of the NG-PON2 standard, or like a subpart of it. But I don't actually know the relationship between all the standards, because I was just looking into it and it was super confusing. Like there's, for example, like also an XGPON standard without the S, so it's not symmetric. You get the same downstream for like roughly 10 gigabits per second, but the upstream then is just 2.4 or 2.5 or something like that, which is then also part of some NG-PON standard, maybe even NG-PON2. So it's basically like there are a lot of standards in this field. I was just concentrating on the two which are mostly in use as far as I know.
Okay, thank you very much, Markus. And so far we are through most of the questions, and have a great rest of the day.